This is a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. Go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
You're listening to Out of the Blue on 3CR Community Radio. I'm Tessa Campisi. And a few weeks ago, on a surprisingly mild Sunday morning in early July, I hauled myself out of bed before sunrise and schlepped it all the way down to San Remo on Bunurong Country. And instead of following the pool of traffic across the bridge heading to the Whale Festival happening on Phillip Island, I parked down by the foreshore, pulled on my gum boots, and picked my way across the tide pool, across the tide pools with my eyes peeled. And it wasn't just me there. Dozens and dozens of folk had come from all over to gaze deep into the rock pools as I look into the eyes of a lover on the hunt for sea slugs.
Today, we're down here as part of the Whale Festival, and given that I believe it's 92% of the biomass in the ocean is invertebrates and not those big charismatic megafauna, I thought I'd introduce people to another side of the coast. My name is Kate Mills. I work for the Victorian National Parks Association running like the Reef Watch program, which is designed around getting people into the marine environment and also just learning about it, connecting with it, and then taking that with them to other places. So we're down here at San Remo today looking for sea slugs, and I call sea slugs like the gateway drug to invertebrates. It's a really good way to get people to look closely and see everything else that's out there, and that the slugs can be really difficult to find. So while they're looking for slugs, they see everything else. So they start to see all the sea cucumbers that have been out there today, the crabs, the shrimp, and some brittle stars. There's like a whole lot of stuff out here that people have never noticed before because they just haven't looked closely. So part of it today is that, but then we're documenting sea slug diversity, not only here, it's being done across Australia. And the idea is we're looking for movement, we're looking for changes in habitat, and that sort of impacts through, you know, human and then also sort of climate change with currents changing. We're able to document sort of species moving across different ranges and through different areas. So the information people are collecting today goes towards telling that story. And so we're utilising this people power. We've got over, it's like 100 people down here today looking, and we've found a huge amount of species. It's been incredible.
Have you guys found a sea slug?
We have a little one over here, yes. Just a little guy.
Oh, he's so small.
He is, but he's also very vibrant.
Do you know which one this is?
We were just looking it up on iNaturalist. I think it was...
Voconia.
Voconia voconus. She's very cute.
Can you describe it to me?
Oh, actually kind of looks like a gherkin, but pink to me. I don't know about you.
Like a tiny little baby gherkin, I can see that.
San Remo is a hot spot for epistobranchs. So basically snails that don't have a shell. So there's been at least, and it's probably more now, 125, 130 species have been documented to occur here, which is heading around a quarter of what we know of in southern Australia.
Wow.
So you can come to this one particular spot. Here is in under the bridge and the rock platform that extends to the north and around to the east. So it's quite an expansive area. People have been studying it for years. I think it was back in the 70s it was studied sort of quite thoroughly. And they've just documented over time a huge diversity down here. And it's unique in that you've got this huge amount of water that flows underneath San Remo Bridge. So you've got all this eggs, food, larvae, everything sort of moving through every day, a couple of times a day. And then you've got this area of sort of shallow reef that it settles out because it's not as high energy. You don't have waves to deal with. So you've got all that stuff that whether it's coming from the ocean or coming from the bay, and here's an area for it to settle. And then just the reef itself has a lot of different microhabitats on it. So like small places that the food for slugs can live because they're not going to be here without the food. So whether it's sponges, bryozoans, ascidians, the stuff that they feed on, it's all here because of the different sort of habitats we have, not only under the bridge, but on the rock platform as well. So it just seems to be the spot, and it's also really accessible. Like you can park your car 50 metres away and walk down on a low tide, and you're going to see amazing things. So getting people to recognise that is part of it as well.
I saw something really freaky before. I don't know what it was. I don't know what... Don't know if I want to know what it was. It was the kind of thing that looks like in a scary sci-fi movie, it would be something that would go up your nose and eat your brain.
How long has this survey been going on?
So we started in 2018 and we were doing like one or two events a year, and then from or post-COVID, so it would have been maybe 22, 23, I started just doing it every season. I thought, oh, if we're going to go out, let's look at the seasonal effects. So that idea of peak water temperature as it drops, water temperature as it hits the bottom, and then water temperature as it comes up, so like the spring. And that's where a lot of marine life, you know, its cycles depend on temperature. So by coming out every season, we can actually start looking at some of the distribution of the slugs over these different spaces and time. So it's been going for like 8 years now, but probably about 4 or 5 years with the seasonality sort of thrown into it.
And what changes have you seen in that time?
I'm still sitting on a lot of the data and we're still sort of trying to draw that out. A lot of it's going to be around patterns. So what we see at different times of year. So getting a feeling for, okay, well, this might be a season when certain things appear at different times. So they're sort of temperature related, because we don't know a lot of the basic biology and ecology of these things. And most of what we know comes from similar genus that's been studied overseas. We know next to nothing. There is a PhD student down here today, Caden, who, as far as I know, was the first PhD student to do sea slugs in Victoria.
Really? It's so funny, because I feel like they've got such a cult following. Like, people are obsessed with them.
But it's mostly naturalists and community that are doing all the work. The guy who knows the most, Bob Byrne, is in his 80s, and he's a building contractor, and he's never been a scientist in his life, but he's published hundreds of papers and was published in Science when he was 24.
Really?
And he is the authority on sea slugs.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Have you guys got something?
Yeah,
we've
got, these guys are both found on today.
What have we got?
You found a pink one.
Oh, nice. So that one's called a Ceratosoma brevicordatum. And do you know what it has? We can almost see. So that's where its gills are there. See that really bright red bit? Yeah. That's where it stores all, a whole lot of toxins.
So don't eat them.
Stores all the nasty stuff. And in my mind, what they do is, because they're so bright, they wiggle their bum at fish. Fish bite that bit and go, ah. That tastes terrible, and have learnt to not eat them. So that's why they can get away with being so bright.
Yeah. Is this the first time you guys have come on the sea slug census?
Yeah. Well, I'm an ornithologist, so I'm a birder, really. Like, we do it, we're out all the time, but we've never come out looking for sea slugs. No.
Slugs have a very similar thing to birding in that people like to keep track of what they find.
Okay.
Because they're so rare in space and time, and there's a lot that we don't know, but we haven't got a term for it yet. Because you've got like, your twitchers, an ornithologist, but they... Sluggers.
You are listening to 3CR Community Radio. This is Out of the Blue, and we're getting up close and personal with the Epistobranchs down on Bunurong Country as part of the seasonal sea slug census run by the Victorian National Parks Association. But how does one even spot a sea slug? Well, there's actually a bit of a knack to it.
How do you find a sea slug? Do you want to tell me about your technique? Because you seem pretty good at finding them.
Well, I was just looking around in the seaweed or seagrass, and then I just saw this bright pink sea slug, and then I realised that it was a sea slug.
So if we were to look at this little pool here, so you're saying that you were lifting up some rocks, is that right? So it's the sort of thing where you lift up a rock like this?
Yeah.
Well, I didn't find anything there. I must not be very good. And then you were just looking around. Were you moving the seaweed?
No, not much. We were just looking for, like, movements and stuff.
So you got to look for movement and colours.
So, like, imagine if there was, like, this. It was, like, moving there. Then we would know that that is some kind of living thing.
It's a bit like birding, where you got to make everything go blurry, and then you look for the movement.
I'm kind of just like bent over, forward, walking slowly, looking for movement, looking for colour.
I'm like running my eyes over the perimeter of all of the objects in the water, like the edges of the rocks and the bulbs of the seaweed.
We're getting summoned.
Let's go, let's go.
Really exciting.
I see cucumber.
I see cucumber.
You know what? We were just talking about how they looked a bit like gherkins.
Don't they?
Look, there it is.
What's his name?
Her name's Winifred.
Hello, Winifred. Yeah. What kind of brought you here today?
Well, I was really interested in the whaling festival, and
A friend of mine did this census a couple of years ago, and she's an artist, and I've always wanted to come back and do it.
Yeah, they're quite inspiring for artists, I imagine. There's a lot to work with there. They're a good muse to have, I think, a sea slug.
Yeah. Like, when you look at the pictures of, say, nudibranchs, they're just so incredible. And then when you see them for real, and some of them are quite small, it's like, wow, that actually exists. It's really, really bizarre, but so incredibly beautiful. And you look at this landscape and you go, wow, it's pretty ordinary. But then when you stop and really look, it's just incredible, the colours that you can see and the textures and then the things, you know. It's just so diverse and something that as humans we just don't do. Because when you look at it from the bridge, it just looks like this brown, rocky sludge. Yeah, but then when you come down here and you stop and really look, it's just breathtaking.
I'm going to give a disclosure that I don't know whether I pronounce any of these things right, because most of the time I'm reading them off a book. But there's one called a Malibi. They are a nudibranch, but they're a weird little bunch of animals. They don't have an official name. So they've just kind of got a list of species, species 1 to about 5 or something that you can find. They open their mouths wide up and it looks like something with a big hoodie or something, and it just filters stuff out of the water as it comes past. You would mistake them for a bit of drift algae if you weren't looking for it specifically. And they're very cute, I think.
This is Nicole Mertens, who is part of the Reef Watch program with VMPA. Nicole has a background in marine ecology and originally actually focused more on sea snails. But over time, she's slowly become more and more obsessed with sea slugs, just like the rest of us.
So, okay, sea slugs then. How are they different to land slugs? Do we know which came first?
That's a doozy. I don't know. Good start, Nicole. They are different. They're all gastropods. Mm-hmm. And it's actually really hard to separate out what technically a sea slug is. Mm. So they are very closely related, but your land slugs tend to breathe air, and our sea slugs mostly have gills. But there are some things that we would call a sea slug that are technically an air-breathing slug.
Oh.
And there's always exceptions to pretty much every rule of anything to do with these things.
So what does a sea slug look like? What are its defining features, I suppose? Oh, there are none. Oh no, another trick question.
There's a couple of different, major groups of the what we know as sea slugs. And they're all kind of a little bit different when it comes to defining features. So, the ones that we're finding out here today, a lot of are the dorids and the aelids. And they're the two, most commonly known and commonly seen because they're quite bright and colourful. Mm. So your dorid nudibranchs, they're more typically slug shaped. So they're kind of a round shape. They do have a little visible foot that you can see. And then they'll have a bit of a mantle, so kind of like a soft, squishy top. Mm-hmm. They have rhinophores, which are these things that look like antennae that sit out on the head. They're closer to, our nose, so they actually pick up on chemicals in the water and they sniff out food or predators.
So they're not eyes?
A lot of them have eyes, so tiny little eye spots. They don't see very well, as far as we know, but they can tell kind of the changes in light. But they're mostly using those rhinophores on the top of their head to sniff out the direction of where to go. And again, because we're calling them dorid nudibranchs, the nudibranch, naked gills, so most of them you'll be able to see a cute little tuft, a feathery tuft on their back, and that's their gills. It's actually sitting outside their bodies.
Like that's their lungs, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, interesting.
So the aelids, instead of having a feathery tuft of gills, they have these things called serrata that look like tentacles or hair kind of all the way along their bodies. And a lot of them have what they're using to breathe are stored in the serrata, but they also have the digestive tract. So when they eat things, and some of them do eat things that have stinging cells like jellyfish, little soft corals and things, so they'll sit inside the serrata. Hold on to these cells. And then it means that, if something comes along and goes for a bite, they'll be in for a bit of a shock.
So they're holding onto the jellyfish stingers.
Yep.
And then using them for themselves.
Yes.
That is so badass. And upcycling. Wow. I'm so impressed with that. Okay. So how do they eat things? Do they have a mouth? Is it like a starfish where they eat it with their stomach and then pull it inside themselves? Like what?
How does it work?
They do mostly have mouths. Some of them, if they're like a sponge eater, they might actually spit out like a little, like an almost acidic kind of chemical to kind of soften the sponge and then slurp it up. Mm. Some of them have not really like teeth, but they have like hard mouth parts that will help them kind of like burrow into things. Mm-hmm. There are these cool little sea slugs that aren't nudibranchs called sap-sucking sea slugs or sacoglossans. And they eat algae. Mm. And what they do is they use a tiny little hard part in their mouth to kind of tear open the algal cell, and then they'll suck all the contents out of the cell. So the sap.
Ah, I see. So they're not actually eating the algae cell. They just want the juice.
Pretty much just like the good stuff on the inside. Yeah. And they, in the same way that we know that some of the aelids and dorids will take like the chemicals and the stinging cells and stuff out of their prey, the sap-sucking sea slugs can suck out the chloroplasts, and we know that some of them, and I know that scientists do weird things in the pursuit of science, but if you keep them in the dark without any food, they can live for quite a long time. And there's a couple of competing theories, and there's more work to be done, but one of the arguments is that they're actually keeping the chloroplasts alive and like using them to photosynthesize when they're in the light, and then living off the sugars when you keep them in the dark.
Wow, they really are like recyclers. Maybe this is why they're so robust. Like, this is such a funny place, I think, for there to be such a diversity of sea slugs, right? We got the highway going past, there's like water constantly moving. It's like pretty intense, like the literal environment is like very intense. But yeah, they seem to be able to like pick up lots of different things to help them survive, hey?
They're certainly an adaptable little group. And yeah, I mean, I love coming out here because it does seem like, and people do, they go, what are you looking for out here? And even when we came down here first, we really didn't expect to be finding like as many species, all the different sizes, colors, shapes. There's some species that I thought I'd never see because I don't really dive or anything, so I didn't get to see all the big ones that you find on the nice reefs and stuff. And we found them here.
So you said you've been doing the citizen science program for a little while now. How many years has it been going?
So we joined the Sea Slug Census Project, which is kind of a larger program going all around the country. And they're now actually a couple of places overseas as well.
Really?
We joined in 2018, it was our first Sea Slug Census. So yeah, 6 years now. And we're starting to get quite a database for Victoria. So a lot of the other projects are location based, and a lot of them initially up around the central New South Wales coast, because that was where the researchers that started the program were working.
But this is a little spot in Victoria. This is our sea slug hotspot down here.
I'd say it is, yes. Mm. Out of anywhere that you want to go, maybe to guarantee seeing a slug, down here. About 130 species found down here, which is about 25% of what we know to be in the state. So yeah, you've got a pretty good selection down here.
Yeah, lots to feast your eyes on. I guess, how many different people have been involved in the project over the years, do you estimate?
So within the sort of the Victorian / Melbourne Sea Slug Census, like it would be hundreds alone, because we do have every year there's kind of a dedicated group of people, probably about a dozen people that would go out, rain, hail or shine. Couldn't have got where we are without these guys. But we do find more and more, especially now that it's on naturalists, a bit more visible, that every time we're getting, you know, sort of 20, 30, 40, 50 observers, depending on the time of the year. And I guess the weather plays a bit of a part too.
And so if people couldn't make it to the Sea Slug Census today, can they still contribute to that citizen science effort?
Yeah, so we run censuses basically seasonally, so every 3 or 4 months. So our next one will be spring one. It's usually a bumper one. It's nice weather. Slugs are out and about too. So pretty much if people want to get involved, they can jump onto the VMPA website, check out the dates for the next census. You don't have to turn up to an event. It's basically, we're just putting the call out that if you are walking along the beach or having a look in a rock pool during a census time and you see something that you think is a slug, take a photo. Upload it to iNaturalist, the experts on iNaturalist, as well as our partners with places like Field Naturalist Club and Museum Victoria, will help identify them, so you don't have to do anything other than take a photo and chuck it on iNat.
Mm. Beautiful. I really hope that there's many more sea slugs to be found.
Yeah, me too.
That was Nicole Mertens from Victorian National Parks Association, who helps coordinate the Sea Slug Census through the ReefWatch Citizen Science Program alongside Cade Mills, who we heard from earlier in the show. A huge thanks to everyone who so generously shared their sea slugs with me. I really appreciate it because, for the record, I found not a single one on my own. So I guess I'll just have to get back there for the spring count. If you want to get more involved with the census and find out a little bit more, you can jump onto the website that Nicole mentioned. That's vnpa.org.au and search for Sea Slug Census. You can find that link in the show notes, plus some pictures of the sea slugs that we saw. And all of that will be on the 3CR website, which is 3cr.org.au/radioblue. And you can find the podcast of this episode and all past episodes. So that's all we have for Out of the Blue today. Stay tuned for Out of the Pan with Sally coming up in just a moment. For now, I'll leave you with this song, which is The Prettiest Sea Slug by Blockhead. Until next time, stay salty.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.